boom.
All right. Got a bone to pick with you, my friend.
Uh-oh. Mm. What,
I ran out of coffee what just as I was about to start the thing.
Some great timing.
Yeah, I know. Look at that. Empty. So, and now we're recording, so I can't go up and get more. So now I'm going to do this with a dry mouth. I just have a rebuttal or a contribution for the amazing, excellent episode of the Limited Art Cast that you did with Kate. Why should anybody care what I think, right?
Yeah.
And Kate brought up a fantastic observation about this notion of a lot of us coming into it. Like when you think about, oh, I'm doing that thing, I got to start with my headline. My headline is that we're all freaking outsiders. And we need to remember that more often. Everybody, no matter where you are in life, no matter what your level of status, we're all outsiders. We all feel like we don't belong in the group. There's those people over there. They're all laughing and smiling. Everybody there feels connected to one another. It's almost like they have telepathy. And I'm over here, and I'm all alone in my dark clothes in my dark corner. I'm like Daria, you know? No matter how happy I seem, I'm all alone. Even with my spouse right here, she doesn't understand me the way that she should, right?
So sorry for the laughing at that, but yeah.
Let me back out a second. Mm-hmm. And like, when you think about people coming into something new, like a new art form or a new skill set or a new adventure of any kind, you always start out aping the surface features. What is the immediately apparent thing that I see, and that's the thing that I'm going to aim for, right? So when you start drawing comics, you start copying the masters, and you copy what? You copy the way they do this kind of inking line. You copy the way they do this kind of a pose, not really looking at the underlying structure. That's the thing you learn after. I'm talking about most people now, but that's the kind of thing you learn after years and years of study and digging deeper, right? Mm-hmm. You agree with me so far?
Yeah, I'm with you.
So when you look at people engaging online, what do you see? You see somebody saying, I'm tweeting a thing. 500 retweets. Famous. They've been given permission by the world to say the things that they want to say. I want that permission. I want that fame. I want people to acknowledge my intelligence and skill, right? Because that's the apparent part. And when we see that crowd of people sitting there in the restaurant all smiling and laughing together and seeming like they belong, we see people acknowledging each other's, you know, expertise, skill. Oh, your sense of humor is so good. I'm laughing at your joke. And you don't feel like you can engage with that because you don't have that thing yet, right? That connection with those people. And this all broke for me. And I posted about this in a private thing that I think you saw. I was watching that strip search show, the Penny Arcade show. Have you seen it yet?
I haven't seen it, but right.
Did we talk about this? Did we talk about this on Extra Lean?
We did not. Nope.
Okay. So I'm watching the show, and I won't spoil it. It's actually a very interesting show. I wish they did more comics on it. I wish that it was more about cartooning, but it's a very interesting show. I've become surprisingly wrapped up in it. I'm surprised at myself for being so emotionally involved in this thing and so intrigued by it. But one of the people on the show gets eliminated because it's a reality show with an elimination contest. And when this person, and by the way, this show is shot over the course of like 2 weeks or something.
Oh,
you know, this is like midway through the show. It's only a few episodes in and somebody gets eliminated. So it's only been a couple days they've been there and they got the camera on them and they're sitting in a car and they're doing the confessional kind of dealy. And this person just has this emotional breakdown. Like, not like, oh, I'm so upset that I lost, or oh, woe is me, I'm a loser. More like crying with it just dawned on this person what it meant to be working in this house with all these other cartoonists and having the sense of camaraderie. That was so powerful, even over such a short period of time, that at its end, like high school graduation or like any kind of rite of passage of something ending in your life, the full scope of what it meant to you crashes on you, and this person starts crying about it.
Mm.
And I'm watching this going like, oh my gosh, you know, there is a perfect example of how solitary this art form or this pursuit can be. And I posted about this, and somebody, I think very astutely, pointed out, well, that particular artist does work in a studio. This person does work with other cartoonists all the time, and they still had that reaction. And he said, so my takeaway is, we all feel like outsiders, no matter what. Even working in a studio with other artists, you still don't feel like we're utterly and, you know, deeply connected to where, you know, where you feel like you deserve that place, right? So why should people care what you share? Because everybody else is an outsider too. And only by sharing your stuff honestly can you make connections with people and lessen that feeling of other people being outsiders, right?
Sure.
That's why you should. That's why people should care, and that's why you should care about what you decide to share with other people.
That is, I think, that's a really powerful observation. I think where essentially the only way to ever possibly enjoy that kind of connection is to attempt that kind of connection. I mean, I don't mean to overly simplify it, but
it
reminds me of how, in the act of going into that sort of, I'm sharing something, you're no longer purely wrapped in yourself, because you could be purely wrapped in yourself when you are in that solitary creation mode, right? You're mm-hmm. building a thing, you're critiquing a thing, you're going with your gut, whatever you're doing as you're creating that. But then it's separate from the act of creating it and the act of sharing it. And so now when you're sharing it, you are now looking for those other benefits of the acknowledgement and the connection. It reminds me of, I'm borrowing from my wife again, Ben, and her study of Adlerian psychology. There is
armchairing it, as it were.
Exactly. That's what I do. And there's something that Adler used to say, or used to suggest, I think, to some of his depressed patients, is to make tea for someone else. Just invite someone over for tea, mm-hmm. make them tea, serve them tea. That's mm-hmm. it, right? And that is an act of getting you outside of yourself, mm-hmm. much like sharing something you create.
Yep. And that sense of outsiderness is what? It's completely an inwardly pointed emotion. I am not them.
Mm, exactly. And it's this uninterrupted looping thought that can just feed in on itself, and and the circle could grow, it could amplify, it could start fire, whatever, but like it's not going to be shaken or broken apart into a line that connects to something or whatnot. It's just going to feed in on itself until that you have this different approach, different perspective.
And perspective is an important word, I think, to underline there, is changing your perspective of, you know, when I was at TCAF and I was hanging out with a bunch of artists, talking with a bunch of artists who I have crazy amounts of respect for. And they're all doing stuff that I want to be doing, you know, and like, oh, you're doing this book. Like, I'm getting to see sneak peeks of what they're doing next year. I'm like, oh, I wish I was doing that, you know? Mm. And let's talk about perspective. If I'm watching this from the perspective of I'm the outsider, I'm the one who missed the bus, I'm the one who doesn't get anything good, they get everything, I get nothing, right? Look at how connected they all are. Look at how they're all like brothers and sisters in arms, and I'm just the hanger on. Or I could look at it as all these people feel like outsiders in their own way. Everybody feels like there's something that alienates them from somebody else. Well, I feel that way too. And if I try to make them feel like I am a welcoming presence and I am open to connection with them, not connection in business card trading, but connection in the sense of I'm going to listen to what you got to say and I'm going to really listen and not interrupt you to tell you my story, but just to listen to you, maybe they'll feel a little less like an outsider for a minute. Maybe I can make them feel good. And that's a completely different perspective on it. And you know what? When I came home, I was on fire. I was electrified from the experience of talking with all those people. And I came home, like, when you go, I'm sure you've experienced this, Rob. Well, maybe you have. Maybe you're a better person than me. You are a better person than me. But I suspect.
No way. That total discount person.
I suspect that this is a weakness that you fall prey to less than I do. You go to a show, you see all these amazing works, and you go, oh, man, I got to up my game. I suck after all. I'm a hack. You go home, you're like, oh, my stuff is so crappy. That shift in perspective meant that I came home going, yeah, I am not doing some of the stuff those people are doing, but good on them for doing it. And I learned some things by talking to them and listening to them. And my time will come. And I just feel good that I got to have these really cool interactions and exchanges with interesting people. Whether they remember me or not, whether they, you know, are my pals or give me job recommendations or whatever, you know, physical or emotional benefits I can derive, I had a good exchange with some people and I opened myself to it. And I stopped worrying so much about poor little old me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that made it easier to share when the time was right to share. So I was thinking about that when I was listening to the episode.
That is really cool. It's really difficult though. Like that is quite a chasm to cross depending on how you feel about it. And there's nothing wrong with having a difficult time to cross that. But like at sooner or later, you'll end up, you know, counseling yourself or you're getting help or something to then eventually, depending on where you're at. I mean, if you're really frozen with doubt, I mean, maybe there's some extra work that a podcast isn't going to do much for.
Of course.
Like, you know, if you're, you know, just some kind of more garden variety doubt or whatnot, where some days you have it, some days you don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole, I'm remembering an ancient self-help book I read called, I thought it was insightful at the time, and no offense if anyone else thinks it's insightful right now. I thought it was fun. I liked the illustrations. I didn't like the illustrations that much when I looked at it later on. I don't know, whatever. Sorry if you illustrated it, but the book is called Being Happy. Really simple. Yeah. Just being happy. And, I read it when I was about 18, right? And it was a lot of pop psychology 101 kind of stuff or whatnot. And I thought it was it was really, you know, good for me at the time. And how do you? Because it can seem so daunting to be like, well, it's easy for you to say because, I kind of believe my doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Basically, yeah. I think that's kind of the argument is like, so if your garden variety doubt, I think maybe the difference is you don't really believe it. You kind of feel it. You go through it, but you're like, nah, that's cool. I can share it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I can reach out. It's all right.
Yeah.
But then
you can divorce yourself from the fear of the negative consequences.
Yeah. Right?
You are in control enough to at least acknowledge that those are abstract things that may or may not happen. And if it happens, you'll deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the difference.
But okay, so yeah, you're right. And in other words, to give anybody counseling or advice about this kind of thing, I don't think what we're doing is giving advice. I think we're just talking about it. But it turns into the parents warning the young kid about what they're going to encounter in adult life. And you're like, A, that's abstract. That's outside of my experience. And B, what do you know, Dad? You know, well, it turns out Dad does know, but a lot of dads know, I should say.
Right.
Not all dads. You can't relay that information to them in a way that's going to mean anything to them.
And that's one of the awesome things. If you're able to challenge the doubt, you give yourself a new perspective and a new experience, which then... Mm. Can whittle away at it so it becomes more common.
Well, I would also come at this with a little bit of evidence too. And perhaps this evidence isn't empirical, but I spend a lot of time talking with young people in my role as a teacher. And one of the young people in my life is a teenager, and she's all into different actors and movies as teenagers are, and She follows them on their social media accounts and like reads interviews about them and reads about them on Tumblr and everything. And she says to me one day, she's like, with like this breathless wonder, it was so charming. She turns to me, she's like, he's a really nice guy. He's really nice. When you talk to him, he talks to his fans. He gives them his time. He's a nice guy. And I'm like, well, what did you think he was? He's a guy who's doing what he loves. Of course he's going to be nice. Like, only the biggest, most monstrous dick is going to do what they love and be a jerk to people about it. And that does happen. Sure. But it shouldn't surprise us when we see somebody who is involved in some kind of a dream career that when you engage with them in an honest way, they're going to be nice to you. But what does that speak to, right? It speaks to the sense of who in this room, in this virtual room right now, was nervous about talking to Krishna Sadasivam at a convention, right?
Me.
Right, but no, I'm just saying it's a perfectly human thing because we guard ourselves against those negative interactions. I don't want to go up to somebody who I admire or have a lot of respect for and have them be mean to me. I've had it happen. It sucks. It's terrible. So you want to guard yourself against that. And part of the defense you build is telling yourself a story of, like, whether you were verbalizing it or not, you're saying, this person could be a monster. This person could be, you know, a self-involved dick. But the truth of the matter is, if you...
Which isn't most, quite what I was thinking.
No, of course not. Of course not. I'm saying that, like...
But no, there's things in that realm that are close to that. I mean, for me, I thought like there are some social dynamics going on at this event that I was at that I'm like, it's beyond me. I mean, there's groups of friends that like, I don't want to be Budinsky guy, right?
Yeah.
Where I'm like, you know what? I'm cool just seeing this experience. So yeah, I opted way toward saying, okay, Doubt, I'm going to hang out with you. I'm not worried about it. You know, it was neat to be here. And I learned a lot.
Yeah.
So,
but there's other things in there too besides.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry to derail you. You were
also, you pointed out, like, you don't want to be the guy who tries too hard. You don't want to be the person. What if you catch him when he's in the middle of something else? You don't want to interrupt him,
yeah.
Right? You want that first encounter to be a natural thing and not a forced thing. Right. There's a lot of things that, like, you know, that you start telling yourself stories to talk yourself out of getting involved. Right.
Yep.
Defense mechanism. Perfectly natural. But the truth that we blind ourselves to when we do that, I start sounding all self-helpy on this. I don't mean to. But is that most people are really, really nice. True. And if you go up to them and if you engage with them honestly, like, OK, so I've had some people who've come up to me. And this is where I get to be a big shot dick. I've had people come up to me and try way too hard. Like people who are like really, for whatever reason, impressed with what I've done or who I am or whatever. And they're trying really hard to be my friend. And guess what? That first 5 seconds of that interaction, or maybe first six, maybe like a minute, 2 minutes, I'm like all open to that. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're into things that I'm into. Let's talk about it. I'm really excited. And then it takes like about 2 minutes. And I'm like, oh, you're trying really hard. Okay, I'm going to start distancing myself because you are clearly super nervous about this and it's making me uncomfortable, right? We've all had that.
Yes. It's so funny how that can feed in on itself. Keep going. Like, it's just that, like, that comes out of our own empathy, right? Where you see them having a hard time. They see you. The person having a hard time and the other person seeing the other person having a hard time is going to all of a sudden have a hard time in some way because they're reacting to it because most of us are, you know, some flavor of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but the point is that first 2 minutes, I'm open to the interaction and I'm open to the notion that you've engaged with me. There's every possibility we could become friends, right? That possibility exists in every engagement that I make. It may happen. It may not happen. But don't force it. And if you don't force it, then, and if we find something to connect on, then we could become friends or not. You know, I engage with people that I have no intention of being friends with. I just want to tell them a thing like, hey, this thing you did, it was really cool. Here's 3 things that it did that nothing else did that I really enjoyed. And I just wanted you to know. You want to know why? Because I want to hear that from people. And I want other people to feel good that way. So, but if we wind up connecting in more levels, then maybe we'll become friends. But it's not a big deal, you know?
That's in either way. I mean, so yeah. How can you How could we talk about doubt in any way, shape, or form that doesn't feel a little bit self-helpy, right?
That's true. That's true.
I mean, we're talking about personal development in a way. So awareness,
mm-hmm.
making, you know, strategies and models and all that kind of stuff for coping or dealing with it. Yeah, whatever.
No, yeah, you're right. And there I am being, you know, uncomfortable with something and making it harder by being uncomfortable about it, right? And no, I'm serious. That was another takeaway that I got from TCAF as I was coming home was I said to myself, you know, I've got opinions on things. And it is totally cool for me to have those opinions. And I was around a lot of people at different times over the weekend who didn't share my opinions about things.
Yeah.
And I just didn't, I didn't offer that. I didn't offer that up for discussion when it came to that. But then I realized as I was driving home and feeling pretty good about myself because like all the fun I had and everything, I realized that I've got a platform of my own that I can share those opinions. And by sharing those opinions, there's somebody out there who shares those opinions who feels like they're an outsider. And they're going to say, finally, somebody who agrees with me on this thing, right?
Yeah.
And so, God, is it dumb? No, it's not dumb. It's not dumb to say that sharing who you are is, in an honest way, is kind of a duty in the sense that there's somebody out there who needs that.
Yeah, I think it's essentially, I look at this as one of my longer term goals is getting stronger at my own creative voice.
Yeah.
And it's very much related to when we create things, we are sharing back out of ourselves things that we filter as they come in and as they come out. And if we're trying to somehow shape that, yeah, there's ways to, you know, there's times, there's contexts where you do want to adjust your behavior, right? I mean, mm-hmm. with, you know, knowing your audience or whatnot. That matters. But then there's still that factor of you could go too far. You could live only in that realm. If you really care about something, you really are having a hard time with something else, there's probably a way to express that that's appropriate, right? And
yeah.
and true at the same time. Anyway, and I wrestle with that.
Yeah. No, I do too. I think, but see, here's the thing. I think everybody does. I think everybody does.
I'm alone.
but like, that's the thing that we tell ourselves though, right?
Yeah.
Because that we live in the state of isolation. We only look through these two eyes or one eye, however many eyes you got. And yep. It's, of course, all evidence points to you're the only one who's witnessing all this stuff.
Yeah, because that silly, we don't have a hive mind, essentially. That's we aren't really sharing thoughts with other people in their totally raw form, right?
So I would submit that to fully buy into the notion that you are all alone and the only outsider is, in an indirect way, an insult to the rest of the human race because you're accusing them of being a hive mind. You're accusing them of being the Borg. They're all connected. They're all smiling at each other. They're all one. I'm the one who's alone. I am God's greatest miracle. is sort of an indirect thing, implicit in that statement.
Yeah, I mean that would be some kind of emotional sickness, or you know, that's
yeah,
and that's where you know people are actually trained at that counseling are available for those folks, and that's a good thing. But hopefully not where, you know, if you're listening to this and you're in anywhere near that realm, you know what? Yeah, we're silly and we joke around. Seriously, get help. And
yeah.
It's cool. I got help. Yeah. Like I've been to counseling before. Like yeah. I've been to counseling a lot during my teens and as right around when I was turning 20. So a lot of my teens. So yeah, and it was awesome. And I had learned a lot of great things about myself and about the world. So
son of a psychologist right here. So
yeah. And then, yeah, married a therapist.
Married a therapist. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing is like, you know, there's a weird, at least like, I don't know how it is everywhere in the United States, but in the areas that I've grown up in, there's like a bit of a stigma associated with needing help. right?
Oh, totally. And maybe it's it could be a Midwestern thing.
I don't know.
My gosh, sometimes we miss when Midwesterners
can
really poke at the things that look like other. And it's probably everybody, but it's like, whoo, look at that other thing. And I even called that out. Anyway, in a certain situation today, I'm like, we're being very Midwestern right now.
Did you follow that with bless your heart?
I was saying it to say, we go further down this path, and it's not quite hate crime, but you know, this is not cool. Break out of your culture bubble, folks. Yeah. Anyway, don't you know? And then I said,
yeah, don't you know? Bless your heart. But yeah, like, there's a stigma attached to, like, what are you, a sissy? Rub some dirt on it, suck it up.
Yeah, I know. And I can perpetuate that crap too. It's what can you do? Shake it off. Whatever.
Context again, man. Context, right? Like, in a different context, those words can be very funny.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, because I think that's another thing that, like, context is another layer to this that I think you and Kate sort of talked about, like, behaving different ways in different groups. Mm. But it's I don't know, the big headline for me was just reminding myself, especially after watching that woman. Well, I spoiled it. It was a woman who was on that show, who had that, like, emotional breakthrough or breakdown.
Okay.
On that show, on Strip Search.
Wow.
And I watched how meaningful that feeling of connection was, right? And it was moving. I mean, and maybe I'm a big sissy, and maybe I should rub some dirt on it and get back in the game. But but I found myself being very emotionally moved by that scene. Like, and it's just this dumb reality web series by the Penny Arcade guys, right? The Penny Arcade guys. They don't have a big reputation for being emotionally moving in any kind of, like, sweet way.
That's true.
They push buttons. They get you emotionally aroused, but usually in more visceral ways.
True.
So, like, here I am, like, watching this going, like, oh, my gosh, that poor woman, you know? And, like, oh, I just want to give her a hug. You know, I know what you're going through, kiddo. It spoke to me, it really kind of, like, shone a light on this notion that what we really desperately want is a sense of connection to something.
And did this all, like, so part of this was, like, you had a philosophical long drive. And right.
Yeah.
Is that?
That's part of it. I drove for 4.5 hours back from Canada. Yeah. And had time to think.
Yeah.
So.
Pretty cool. And so I would say, I don't know, this may be cheese ball, but I don't care. But like that, you're alone and isolated in that situation. And you're like basking in these new aware, like, connections and whatnot. So, which is a lot like, you know, things that we can put together when we're creating or whatnot.
But here's the thing. You want to know what my next thought was when I was thinking about this? Was my brain is going, check mark, check mark, check mark. Follow up with Rob on this. Take this to Extra Lean. Oh, if not Extra Lean, take it to a Thunder Punch Daily. Make a blog post about it. This is information that I think is interesting, and therefore I'm going to put it someplace where other people can find it. God, that's another way to put it. It's not about pushing it out. It's not about pushing it out to, hey, world, listen to me. Look at what I did. It's putting it in a place where somebody can freaking find it.
Wow. That is awesome. That's a wonderful way to put it, dude, because it's so it's clear, and it's not an imposition to thoughtfully place something.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, I just thought of that now. And here's
put it somewhere where people can find it. That's a heck of a Jersey quote.
Okay. Well, I'm sure I didn't coin that. I'm sure somebody else said it before me. But I'm writing that down just in case.
Trademark. I'm going to have to go back, rewind the tape and whatnot to pick up the whole quote. But yeah, it was beautiful way to put it. It reminds me, I do these, I jot stuff down on note cards that I try to come up with these really concise, you know, concept expressing things once in a while, observations and whatnot. And I don't, you know, once in a while I can pull it off, but a lot of times I just, you know, get a draft a rough inkling toward the idea. And I'm working on one that's not complete, but what you described reminds me of it. It's a much more human and cool, touching way to say it. I wrote as far as what is design, and well, look at me be hoity-toity. design is placement in context with purpose.
Yeah.
And that would be like my design is making something and putting it where someone else can find it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I like this idea of context with purpose too, though.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because like putting it where people can find it sounds like a message in a bottle, right? Here I am. I'm throwing it into the ocean, and someone may find it. It may be my soulmate. It has the tendency to sound that whimsical, right?
Yeah.
Believe in love and promises. But yours sounds like, hey, I'm walking into this room. All of my movements are intentional. No energy is wasted. I'm putting this thing where it needs to be in order to communicate the maximum amount of information with the minimal amount of effort.
Hmm.
Yours is jujitsu. And mine was, you know, Tai Chi.
Poetry.
Yoga. I guess so. But I like yours better. As a matter of fact, have you ever listened to Charles Eames get interviewed about design?
Yeah, actually, in preparing for our design series. Yeah, absolutely.
So have you heard that questionnaire where like, what is design? It's like, design is for use, but design is also not for use. And sometimes design can be used, but also for design. And I'm like, what? What did you just say? Like, is design always useful? No. Is design sometimes useful? Sometimes. What are you saying?
That is a funny interview, actually. That is an obtuse teacher being
being a very,
very obtuse teacher.
Yes. And so you just came in and just threw out one sentence that just answered the whole freaking interview.
That's funny. And I just brought up where I don't know. It's almost you spouted beautiful poetry, and I just wanted to share something too because I thought it kind of fit. I thought I should hang out on the similar shelf where you put that thing.